Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here. We're getting ready to talk with Zach Storch from King of the Nerds Season 2 and some special bonus King of the Nerds Season 3 coverage here on the podcast today. Before we get into my interview with Zach, I want to take a moment and play you guys a promo for the upcoming new series coming to ABC, American Crime, which premieres this Thursday night at 10 p.m. 9 Central on ABC. This is a promo for American Crime, which of course is the companion show to the American Crime podcast coming to Podcast One. So check this out. And then we'll listen to Zach Storch from King of the Nerds.
From the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave comes television's most extraordinary new dramatic series. Starting Thursday, March 5th, watch American Crime live at 10, 9 Central on ABC. Then tune into the American Crime podcast hosted by me, Elvis Mitchell. Each week, we'll have a candid conversation with show creator John Ridley, plus show talent, character storylines, and more. Go to podcastone.com/American Crime to subscribe now.
All right, everybody. I have a very special treat today on the podcast, and this is somebody who I said was my favorite from King of the Nerds Season 2, and my favorite King of the Nerds contestant ever, with all due respect to everybody out there. Let's welcome back to the podcast, good friend of the show, Zach Storch is here.
Hi. Zach. Thanks for having me here.
How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Yes, good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad that we were able to talk with you and just get a sense of what's going on with you and also your take on this new season of King of the Nerds Season 3, which, like, before we even knew it, it's almost over.
Yeah, I know. It's felt like it's gone by so fast and so weird now watching it after I've participated in it. It's a fun experience, but it has gone by really fast.
Yeah, it's gone by very fast. So I definitely want to get your take on everything that's going on. But I have to say, I was so disappointed that here comes all of the King of the Nerd alumni, including yourself, on the episode where they did the Nerd Anthem. And I feel like they barely used you guys.
Yeah, and I wish we could have done more. It was a lot of fun. It was really fun to get to be back there. I feel like we nailed our cameo appearances. It was really cool. I wish that they had brought me in. I didn't even get told about their when they had people in the audience watching the anthems. I wasn't there, unfortunately. But you know, it was a lot of fun just to be able to go back. And you might have also seen me on episode one very, very briefly as one of the elder nerds.
Oh. Well, first off, so they let other people watch the show, but they made you go home?
Oh, no. It was, I think there was just some sort of communication error among the, production at the time or something. I just didn't get informed that it was happening. I was in town for that.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And did they do like confessionals with you guys? Like, I feel like I would have liked to have heard what you guys had to say about what was going on with those nerd anthems.
No, there wasn't anything like that, but it was a blast just to be back, get to, you know, see some of the new Nerdvana and get to, you know, rehearse for our really great little flash mob thing. It was a lot of fun to do.
Yes. Well, Zach, I don't know if you can say it, but I'm going to say it. I think they dropped the ball. I think they dropped the ball getting to hear what you guys had to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that they really do love bringing back people for the show. It's something that I know that they want to do as much as possible because what we have on King of the Nerds is a very character focused reality television show. So we are very focused on that. And I think that in future seasons, which hopefully we'll have the numbers so far, I've heard that the ratings have been fantastic so far.
Oh,
so
good.
Hopefully we'll have more to come. And I'm sure that they'll be bringing us back in the future as well, because they love us.
Okay, good. Well, here's what I think most people want to know from you about this current season, which was, in a lot of ways, was a very different season than the season that you played on, where it seems like there definitely is this alliance, which is sort of dominating things strategically, where it seems like more like on your season, things were a little more dictated by friendship. Do you have any problem with this more strategic version of the game? And is that how you see it as well?
It's interesting. You know, I think the core reason that this happened is because on the past two seasons, we picked our teams ourselves. This time teams were picked, you know, by, you know, whoever. And then, everyone still tried to kind of make their own teams through this alliance, this big six-person alliance, which, I mean, that's a team right there, six people. So I think it's interesting. I think it made the show strange to watch. It obviously made you want to root for people going against the machine, like you know, Todd and Colby, and hoping that they could kind of break into it a little bit. But it made it more difficult, stranger to watch. At the same time, however, it's not actually that astronomically different than what we had on my season at the same time, because on my season, we still had Titans of Rigel trying to dismantle my team and effectively voting in people who almost even knew who they were going in. So it was a little bit, there was still some cross-team action going in, back and forth, I feel like. But it's very different this time. And I think it's interesting, and it's definitely a byproduct of not picking teams.
Now, have you become friendly with the current cast? Does that happen where the King of the Nerds cast like all sort of know each other now?
Yeah. We've all had the chance to meet each other at events. Like there was the midwinter convention when a bunch of people met up. I wasn't able to go there because I saved my travel money to be able to make it down to the premiere party. But we all got to meet up at the premiere party, and that was a lot of fun. And yeah, I think they're a really interesting, great group of people. And it's cool to kind of invite them into our family that we kind of have. It's really exciting. That's really good.
Is there any sort of hierarchy in the King of the Nerds community? Like, I know how it is on Survivor and Survivor. They have people who made the merge, people who didn't make the merge, people who, if you're on the jury. Is there any sort of hierarchy where if somebody who is kicked off King of the Nerds first, and then you have somebody who's a winner or somebody like yourself, is there any sort of class system amongst the nerds, the contestants on the show?
That's an interesting question. I would definitely say that no, nothing is based on when you were eliminated. We have people who were eliminated, you know, first or second or whatever, who are still very integrated with our group. I think it's largely based on kind of who's just sort of stepped up to the bat to do some of the more administrative things. For example, Xander has worked. Well, you know, like when we're planning the premiere party, Xander works really hard to help plan those and make it really awesome. I mean, you know, we have things just that sort of thing. I think there's also kind of some of the people, too, who are I think there's, you know, the general leaders is the same thing.
OK, good. And everybody gets along.
I think by and large, we actually do, which is pretty darn cool, because obviously tensions run pretty darned high when you're on a reality show like King of the Nerds or any other show. But I think that by and large, people accept their differences and we actually do get along, which is really cool.
Yeah. And what about Bobby and Curtis? Do they associate with you guys after the show?
Well, you know, Curtis always has a party at his place. He's put on a party at his place. Yeah. I think he's mentioned that before on Twitter and whatnot. Curtis is a pretty involved guy. He's really cool.
Yeah. But Bobby is a little more aloof.
He's just less present. He's awesome as well, but he's just less present.
And Curtis has all the cast members come to his house?
Well, yeah, I think he's thrown that on Twitter before. Last year for the season two, I think he actually tweeted a picture of when we invaded his bedroom and we're like keeping up and stuff. It was hilarious.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, he's a pretty down-to-earth guy as far as, like, movie stars go. He's awesome.
Okay. I want to know from you about this current cast. First off, do you have a favorite? Is there somebody that you relate to as sort of the Zach of this season?
Well, you know, my favorites going into it were Colby, Todd, and Ori, all of which are, you know, as of episode six, are gone. I really liked watching Ori because his kind of just incredible enthusiasm about being there was something that I really resonated with. The way they walked into the courtyard just on the first day and he was so freaking excited to be there. And I really felt that too. So I thought some of his hyperactivity and his just excitement matched all of mine. I really, really liked Colby's drive and Colby's incredible strength. He did extremely well under pressure, pushed into a situation very similar to mine where it's basically just you're going in every single nerd off. There's stuff you can do about it. He kicked a lot of butt before he went down, so I think he deserves a lot of commendation for that.
Now, Zach, if you and Colby were on Jeopardy, who would win?
Oh, definitely Colby, because I just don't know that breadth of trivia that he does. He is a very, very knowledgeable person. Like incredibly, I was talking to him like, how do you do it? Cause he knows so much stuff. You know, I've heard him even just do trivia games and whatnot. He can just nail out almost everything. He actually says that his number one favorite research from is Wikipedia, which is an interesting concept. It's just, if you click through enough of the links on Wikipedia, you can just like read tons of random facts.
Yeah. Does he have a photographic memory? Is that how he does that?
I have no idea what he has going on, but he's pretty bright.
Yeah. Well, they keep saying that he's, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep. So he knows like a little bit about like just about anything you can come up with.
Yeah. Which I think is tends to be his study strategy as well. He was saying that what he likes to do is try to like look at a topic, learn like the main three characters about it and then three facts about it or something. And then like, okay, done. Move on to the next topic when he was preparing for Nerd Offs.
Okay. Now we're down to only two episodes left and we're down to the final six. How do you see this shaking out? Do you have a pick as to who you think will win the King of the Nerds?
There's really two that I'm sort of going back and forth between. I think Rochelle and Jonathan both have a pretty good shot at this point.
Yeah.
I say that because I think Rochelle is a very creative, very intelligent player. And then Jonathan, you look at him, he's kind of the last really big analytical powerhouse next to Caitlin, who's left in the competition at this point. So I think it really goes down into what episode 7 ends up being. If episode 7 ends up being more analytically driven or if it ends up being more creatively driven, I think that's going to very much shape the rest of the game. So I think this next episode is going to be really, really, really critical.
Yeah.
But they're still shot. You know, it's kind of funny. We've had now in a row, we've had two Queens of the Nerds. There is a shot that we will see a King of the Nerds, I think, in this season. I think could actually shake out that way.
You think a man can actually win King of the Nerds?
Potentially at this point. Obviously, all we have left right now is we've got Ben and we've got Jonathan, but they're both very good players. And Jonathan is a very bright guy, and usually the analytical powerhouses do well on King of the Nerds. If you look at some of those people, they typically do very well. So I think he has a shot if he survives this next episode.
What makes a good player on King of the Nerds? Because I feel like it's a hard thing to put a finger on.
You know, there's really, really a mix of it, too. And I think that's very true. It can also be so heavily based on the challenges. I feel like this season, we've had obviously more pop culture people in the competition than previous seasons where it's been slightly more analytically tilted, I feel like. So if you look at it, I think it's generally the thing that I was always saying, like I wanted on my team because I thought it's what makes the best individual. And I still stand by this to some extent. I think this is right. Is someone who is incredibly talented in one or two areas, but has a wide breadth of information in virtually everything else. So someone with working knowledges of all areas of nerddom and you know, academia, but people who have one or two really, really specialized skills.
Okay. So you think that's, you're better off to have a really strong specialty, but, you know, just totally not ignore everything else, as opposed to just like be really well-versed, but not have an expertise in anything a la Colby.
Right. And I think that's generally the best way to do it is to have at least a little strong specialized skill. Colby was able to pull it off because of his incredible study skills that he has going on. And then also one of his nerd offs was like a pure history nerd off. Mm-hmm. So he had that was his specialized skill that he was able to show off there because that's what he does. He's a history teacher. So he was able to show off his history knowledge there. But at the same time, if we actually look at who has won King of the Nerds, it's usually not those players. The players that do really well and win a lot of nerd offs or that just make it far into the competition are the players that I was outlining there. But the players who win, it's been shakeups usually in the last episode. It's gone ways that people didn't really expect, even that our cast didn't really expect. I mean, Kayla's awesome, but we did not expect her to win. So right. that came from behind. I think a similar thing may have happened with Celeste. I'm not really sure how the dynamics or what people were expecting there, but Celeste managed to rise to the top on season one as well. So
now, do you feel like Colby sort of was mentally checked out by the time he went to the Nerd Off this past week?
I think he was. I think you could tell that just a little bit. I think he was still doing very well, but I think he was starting to get to the point that he was just kind of annoyed. At that point, I think he was kind of getting frustrated that it was always just going to be him until, you know, it was going to be him until he lost is how that was going to work out for him. So I think he was a little bit checked out. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that it was because he realized he couldn't win? Was that why or he just didn't want to be there anymore?
I'm not sure what it was. I do think there was a difference in his attitude, though, going into that. I've talked to him a little bit because I was curious about, you know, his thoughts on things. But I think by and large, he was definitely in there for the win because he's a very competitive person. He wanted to win that. I know he did. But he was going against Heather, and ultimately Heather was able to outplay him on that.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, I know we talked about the Secret Six and how they had an alliance, but it almost seems like there's a weakness here within the Secret Six. And again, like, it's fine. I have no problem with, you know, you want to play strategically on a reality show, and that's so much of what we talk about with Survivor and Big Brother. But it almost seems like that for some of the people in the Secret Six, it was like, okay, we have an alliance just to get rid of the people that aren't in the Secret Six. But when push comes to shove, we've seen that the players are not that cutthroat to want to take out the people who are actually in the Secret Six. And I felt like it was a little bit of a blind spot this past week between, Amanda and Jonathan talking about, how are we going to decide who goes home? Do you feel like are the players not cutthroat enough with this alliance?
I think that it's interesting. One thing that I've thought about a lot when it comes to the social dynamics on a show like King of the Nerds versus a show like Big Brother or a show like Survivor is that you're dealing with a different group of people, and honestly, on a lot of levels. We're dealing with people who have all known what it's like to be the odd one out. We're dealing with people that are kind of outcasts in a lot of their everyday life to varying degrees. So I think that the interactions end up being a little bit different, sometimes even a little bit tamer. So I would say that they're cutthroat, but I wouldn't say that they're any less strategic.
Okay. Because
they're less cutthroat, rather. Yeah.
It seems like this past week we saw one Jonathan volunteer to go into the Nerd Off. Do you ever think that's a good move?
I think obviously it's not ever a good decision. I think it can work out for you. As we saw with Amanda voting herself into this one, and then when I voted myself into them, we're the only two people to ever actually survive voting yourself into a Nerd Off. So it can work out. I think if you manage to come back from it, it's kind of like the ultimate, like, show of badassery and nirvana that you can possibly do is put yourself into the elimination challenge and then still kick butt. It looks really cool. It looks really impressive. Definitely puts a target on your back, but it's still one of the coolest moves you can possibly pull off.
Yeah.
So I think that it is obviously from a strategic perspective, it is never the correct thing to do. I don't think there's really a strategy where you can possibly say that it's the right thing to do. But it's certainly really badass if you pull it off.
Now, if you were going to coach up somebody to go on King of the Nerds, would you just tell them to avoid the Nerd Off? You know, if you don't go into the Nerd Off, you can't go home.
Well, I mean, like, at the same time, I had so much more fun by just, like, saying basically screw it to the social game. The real thing that's so interesting is that, you know, if we're looking at this season versus my season, is this season we did have a really developed social game with lots of, like, alliances and those things. And then basically on my season, I kind of was just like, I don't really feel like doing that. I'm just going to try to win on my own, basically, to some extent, after the alliance with Nicole went south. So, I mean, you can have a lot more fun if you're confident enough in yourself just to win all the Nerd Offs, that's for sure. But obviously the most strategic decision to make is to try not to go into the Nerd Offs, but you're going to have a lot more fun if you do.
Yeah. Is that a big deal? Like, is it almost like that, you know, do you guys not care that much about the prize? And it's like, hey, let me just see how much fun I can have while I'm out here playing this game. And if it's not, if I don't end up being the winner, then, you know, so what? At least I had a good time.
Well, I know that I really, really wanted to win. I know that everyone else there really, really, really wanted to win. But I don't think that the driving motivation on King of the Nerds is usually the prize money at all. It's $100,000, which is awesome. That's a lot of money. But at the same time, we're also dealing with a lot of academics. Most of us have all sorts of, student loans and whatnot. And it's not really that much money to even put a dent in those kind of things. It's something. It's a lot of money. It's a big deal. But we're all people that are probably in debt on some level. So, I mean, it's cool. But I think most of us are there to try to win. I think most of us are there to try and just get that title and be the best, you know? And I think that We're always very competitive people and people who just want to win for the sake of winning.
Do you think it almost makes the show better that the prize isn't that great, where it's almost like, say it was like $1 million. Do you think people would play more scared as opposed to $100,000? It's like everybody wants it, but, you know, you're not afraid to make big moves because, you know, if you don't end up winning the $100,000, it's not like you're going to be like, you can't sleep at night.
No, yeah, I would totally agree with you on that. I think that it actually lets there be a slightly a calmer, happier tone to the show because it's not a ridiculously huge amount of money. You know, we also have shows like The Quest, where they had basically, there was no prize in that. They didn't even give you like a fancy sword or something. There was no, it's just, you're the one true hero. Yay. Which created a very different vibe on that show. I feel like even more different than on King of the Nerds, where there's at least something at the end of it if you win. So I definitely think that that's a very interesting thing to see in reality television. I think you're probably right that the higher the prize money is, the more cutthroat we're going to see gameplay be.
Well, I'm almost saying that you might even play scared higher the prize is. It's like, oh, I don't want to screw up my position here and go into the nerd off because I don't want to blow my shot at winning this money.
No, that does make sense as well. People would want to play a lot more cautiously. I know that. If you look at the people who end up in the nerd off every time, they're usually people that fail the social game on some level. So we had people like Alana who ended up in the nerd off a lot. That's because she kind of didn't play the social game well. There's people like me who obviously did not play the social game as well as we could have. And then there's people like Todd or Colby. I feel like Todd was very much a victim just of the secret six. I feel like there might have been more things that Colby could have done to work his way back into it. He kind of started having an in with Caitlin wanting to work with him on some stuff. And I feel like he could have maybe swung another person onto there. So there might have been other things he could have done. But it's usually people get punished for losing the social game, which is interesting on the nerd show. It is actually a little funny that happens. But you would definitely play more cautiously. I think you're right.
Now, Zach, have you heard anything from the fans who are unhappy with the Secret Six?
I have.
And what do you say to them?
Yeah, I was about to say. I think what I would say to them is that it's a different game. We still have the same sort of awesome, nerdy, driven people working and fighting each other every single week. But I think that alliances are going to change the nature of the game. I would think that it's not as I wouldn't want to say as nerdy because I've met all of these people and I think that they're all really awesome and nerdy. But it's a very different way to play the game. I would sympathize with some of these people, but I would also say that I think the show is every bit as awesome as it's been for the last two seasons as well.
Do you think in King of the Nerds season 4 we're likely to see another big cross team alliance form?
I think we will unless the format changes in some way. Obviously they're always talking about ways that they can spice it up. They've said this, whatever. I mean, if the format changes again, so if it's something like, for example, I mean, if it's something as minor as we go back to teams being picked by the cast themselves, I mean, that would prevent cross team alliances because what's really strange is that I feel like people just ended up working with the people they wanted to work with. As you were saying, it was friendship based on some level. And people worked with the people that they wanted to work with. If you're allowed to pick your teams, those are the people you're going to put in your team, then you're going to have team pride and then you're going to want to work with those people. Midas Touch Attack, we wanted to get to the end. Titans of Rigel, they wanted to get to the end completely intact. You know, we wanted those things and the team pride is what protects there from being a cross team alliance. So I think that if we don't see teams being picked by the cast again, we probably will see another cross team alliance.
Got it. What do you think happened in the future that Curtis had to go back and Curtis Bobby went back and said, hey, don't let the teams draft their own players?
I think clearly what happened is like we had some sort of weird mix up. Maybe like maybe two of them got on the same team. And they ended up like way in the future, falling in love, having a romance, having a child. And then the child grows up, rules some sort of like horrible, cruel empire and then dominates the entire world. And then that's what caused the sort of post-apocalyptic vibe. So what we needed to do instead was try to pit these people against each other so they become enemies. That could happen. Well, sure. Yeah. Let's go with that.
I'm glad we dodged the bullet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a close one.
Now, I know you weren't there when they did the performances, but I'm sure you heard from the people that were there about the whole thing with Moby. Was that worse than what we saw on TV, or did the editing make that look like it was more rough than it actually was in person?
I haven't actually heard anything additional about that. But Curtis was actually just to hang out with me and a handful of other people just a while back, and I think you mentioned that someone in production ran into Moby or something at a supermarket, and Moby was like, did I look really bad or something? And we were like, no, he looked great. You know, I thought it was actually really funny watching him interact with the contestants like that. You don't want that to happen in every challenge, but if it happens just every once in a while, it's really funny.
Yeah, I thought that was really great on the show. And Moby seemed like he was a little cranky, right?
He definitely did seem just a little bit cranky, and he definitely recognized that he was coming off as really cranky.
Yeah. He really did. I have some questions for you from the listeners of Rob as a Podcaster. People are very excited that you were going to be back on the show to talk some King of the Nerds. Let's start with Chris Nichols, who says, does it feel great being better than everybody else?
Wow. Yeah, of course, everyone likes to feel better than other people, because that's just like a common drive of social sciences and social interaction. And everyone loves to feel that way.
Wow.
But thank you for the compliment.
Yeah, Chris Nichols. All right, here's from Mark Solera, who co-hosts the King of the Nerds recap podcast that we do every week on Fridays. Says, what challenge this season do you wish you could have done? Also, can you confirm you want to be Mark's best friend?
I really liked the boat building one. I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a really, really unique, interesting challenge. So I think that would be one I would have been interested in. I really liked this just past Horror Nerd Off, because I thought it would be really fun to get to beat up on some zombies too. And then probably the other one I liked the most was just actually the first Nerd Off, stomping around in the giant kaiju monster suits and crushing cities. That just looked really, really fun.
Yeah. Now, do you want to be Mark's best friend?
Sure.
Okay, there you go.
Yay!
I didn't love the CSI task this week.
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was also just like really kind of specialized the same way. It ended up being, I mean, they could have done that a lot easier than it was.
Yeah. How so?
Well, I mean, like for the blood splatter, actually having to like match up the blood splatter like that, that's hard versus just like there could have been like pictures or something else. It could have been easier. Fingerprint stuff, that's actually really hard to do, the fingerprint things. It's something that I haven't actually ever tried it before, but I've read that it's dramatically harder than it kind of just looks on the shows. And it's something that definitely does take some trial and error. So I thought that was pretty impressive that they made them do something that was a relatively specialized task during the Nerd War. Usually the Nerd Wars are kind of done in a way that anyone can contribute on some level. And that was something that anyone could figure out, but it was still a specialized skill.
Yeah. I felt like it was just, it just seemed a little odd for, it didn't seem like it was especially nerdy. It just seemed like it's almost like a different genre.
It felt a little bit more difficult to keep track of, I thought, when I was watching it.
Yes.
I did think it was an exciting one to watch, but it was harder to keep track of the progress of everyone, and it was a little bit harder to understand, I feel like.
Did you have any thoughts as to how you would build your cardboard box boat?
I think I probably would have gone similar to the just square ones. I thought those were really, really good designs. Definitely trying to laminate as many things with duct tape as humanly possible, because duct tape is awesome. But I think it was, I think that they both did really good jobs, but I think the square design was probably the best way to go.
Okay. Laura Holtzwasser wants to know, will you be at PAX East? And if so, can we take shots?
I don't know if I'll be at PAX East. I haven't gotten any tickets or anything, so I probably won't be. But if I was, then sure, we could totally take shots.
Is that something people ask you to do a lot, to, you know, do shots of alcohol?
Never.
Never?
I mean, I love that. I mean, if you look on like YouTube for all the past clips too, it's that clip of me doing that shot with MK, which is like the second most viewed clip or something in King of the Nerds. It's like next to, or it's one of the top three. So I think the tops are like when I yelled at MK, when I took shots with MK, and then my big like nerd apology speech. But it's funny that it's something I'm known for now, but I'm really not a heavy drinker, as I guess you'd all know.
Nobody ever comes up to you and is like, come on, let's do a shot.
No, I've never had that.
Okay, and not until you meet Laura Holtzwasser.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like this season, this cast is more of a partier cast than the season 2 cast was.
Yeah, you know, I think the other effect of that is that we kind of had two really heavy drinkers in season 2, or two people that really liked alcohol. Mm-hmm. It was basically MK and Brian that were the two people who appreciated good alcohol the most. So when MK was gone, I think what kind of happened is Brian didn't actually really have too many people to actually drink with. So then there was less drinking in our season versus season one and season three, where there's been lots of drinking.
Yeah, very boozy and lots of sex talk in the King of the Nerds house this year. Who's 80-20? Who's going to do this to other people? Are you surprised that there is that much sex talk this season?
It's weird because, you know, on season one, there was a little bit. On season two, there was basically none at all. We also had several people in the house who were extremely shy about such conversations and did not want to participate in them whatsoever. And then on season three, we have a cast that's just incredibly comfortable talking about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's definitely different. I think, you know, if you just pick a random group of people, you're going to get different atmospheres and different groups of people who are comfortable. I think by and large, it was that on season two, we had a couple people such as Kayla who weren't too keen on wanting to discuss those kind of things. So out of respect, we didn't talk about them.
Okay. Mike Shaheen wants to know, what advice would you have given Colby, who was in a similar situation that you were in, where it was you against the world last season?
You know, I think, I think he handled himself great, is what I would say. I think that what he could have done better is, better mental games with the people he was competing against. In a nerd off, you have a chance to have a mental game impact. The social game doesn't end just because you're getting voted in. The social game, you know, can start there. There's new social games that start there. We saw things, for example, such as Nicole trolling me for the entire time during her nerd off against me. We saw things, you know, the way that I handled, obviously talking to MK and Josh, which I'm not too proud of, but still, those are things you can do. And we didn't see Colby trying to do any of that. Which, so on some level, great classy move by him. That's really cool. He wanted to win by his own wits entirely. But the social game can keep going. There's things that, you know, you can do to get a mental edge on your opponents.
Yeah. Okay. So let's take a question from Dan Sinensky, who wants to know, Zach, how did you get on King of the Nerds? Do you have any pointers? Now, I know a lot of people who watch the show really want to be on the show. Is that a fair assessment that you found?
Oh yeah, I mean, I get recognized by a lot of people still, and at least like half of them tell me they want to be on the show, and it's an awesome show.
So start with, how did you get on the show, and then a little bit about how other people can get on the show.
Definitely, sure. So I got on the show because I was a huge mega fan of the first season. So, I mean, I was watching it like every single episode. I'd watch them on the reruns. I'd watch them on demand and watch them again when I was just bored. I'd have it on like constantly. I was obsessed with it. I loved it so much. So when the, you know, audition tapes came out, or when the advertisements, I mean, that were asking for audition tapes came out just on TBS, I was like, sure, maybe I'll do it. I was hesitant at first. A couple of my friends in my World of Warcraft guild were like, dude, you should totally do it. Who else are they going to take except you? You're totally perfect for it. So I was like, okay, sure, I'll do it. And I sent the tape. I actually had to call my mom to come over and help me film it. I figured that would give me just sort of like karma nerd credit too, that the only person I could manage to get that wasn't busy was my own mom. But I just did a tape and I sent it in, and it starts the rather lengthy and extremely time consuming process that is auditioning for a major show like this.
Okay.
And then, yeah, definitely advice. Your audition tape can be basically anything. I know that there are some contestants who have done very dramatic, very well edited, very, you know, lots of crazy fun things going on in their audition tape. Myself, I'm not actually cleared to release my tape, but I can talk about it a little, I think. I was basically just standing in front of a wall and just talking about myself with a speech I'd practiced. That was it. It was a very well-written speech. I think it covered a lot of things about me, and I think it was good, but I didn't do that much. What they're really looking for is really two things. One, they want to look for that you have the personality. They want to know just that your personality is cool. By that, what I mean is, it doesn't mean that you need to have a certain kind of personality. Just be yourself, but be yourself on like your best day. That's kind of what these people, it's what they want to see. They want to see you in true, but they want to see you when like you're on your A game. And then the other thing is just, have the personality and then just be able to talk well. And I know that sounds a little bit a little silly, but one of the most important things for just appearing well and wanting and actually getting onto a show like this, I think, is just appearing like you could be on television and just having, you know, move your hands when you talk, be expressive if that's who you are. If that's not who you are, then just showcase the personality of who you are, but just like, you know, up to 11.
Yeah. And I think that this show, one of the reasons why people like it so much is that the confessionals are really unique and well done. And there's so many people on this show that give like a really like clever, witty thing in the confessional room or whenever they do those interviews that they cut into the show. And I think that really helps the show out in, you know, making it such a unique product.
I totally agree with you. You know, when you have so many super creative people too in one place and we're all playing off each other, it's so easy to just come up with interesting, funny things to say during the confessionals. And I think it's something that we all really enjoy doing. And I think you're right that that's a really cool part of the show.
Okay. One last question from Jessica Lise, who says, this season, Amanda seemed to be bringing strategy into King of the Nerds that she learned from watching Survivor, Big Brother, and similar. Did Zach bring any prior reality show knowledge / expertise to the table? And if so, did any of it prove useful?
You know, so growing up, the person in my family, you know, I mean, a couple of my family members liked reality TV. I was never that big on it. I would watch some of it. I like The Amazing Race. I like Survivor, but usually just early Survivor. I haven't watched a lot of the more recent stuff. So I have very limited reality TV show experience in terms of being a viewer. So I didn't have that much to bring into it. The things I did kind of know were like, okay, so you're supposed to try to make alliances or something. And like, if you manage to get at least one partner on your side who's not going to betray you, that's probably really good. That didn't work out, Nicole. But so these things don't, I guess I would say that no, these things did not work out. And my game plan completely went south. And in the end, I think it actually worked out awesome because I gained a ton of confidence myself by kicking a lot of butt in the elimination challenges. And it left me actually feeling pretty confident and in a lot of really good ways. So I'm kind of glad that my plans went south, actually.
How important do you think it will be for a King of the Nerds 4 contestant to have seen seasons 1, 2, and 3?
I think that having seen prior seasons is huge, and it's a major, major help. Because then obviously the one show that I really obsessed over was just King of the Nerds season 1. And I think the more that you watch how this show works, the better. It's also a way that you can kind of get into the challenge designers' heads a little bit, which I think is a really, really key part. Like we saw in episode 6 here where they were trying to predict what the Nerd Off is going to be. We were trying to do similar things just in season 2. I remember I was looking at the shelves in the like living room area because there was a bunch of stuff on them. And I came to the realization that several of the things on the shelves matched things that were in Nerd Off. There was like a blue and a red army that were fighting off. There was like a zombie foot. There was some Nerf gun. And I was like, I think I figured out, we just got to figure out the order on the shelves now. And then of course, I think it was either Chris or Brian that went, okay, but when's the candy challenge coming up? Because there was those jars of candy. But so that was amusing. But no, I think the more that you watch the show, the more you kind of learn how it's developed. And I think that helps. It also helps to learn how groups of people like this interact because we're dealing with such an intellectual crowd. And I think it's huge to watch the show.
Okay. And have you heard anything through the grapevine? King of the Nerds season 4 is likely to happen. Is it on the fence?
I haven't heard anything, but the good news is that we've had really, really good ratings. The ratings have been solid. I think they've been consistently better than season 2. Apparently the time slot has somehow helped, which is paradoxical because this is historically a very bad time slot. The Friday is at 9/8 central. That's traditionally a bad time slot from what I've heard. I think we might have the phenomenon going on that now it's the best thing on Friday nights.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Also, but, I think that, yeah, you know, traditionally it's like, okay, so Friday night's a terrible night for TV because people are out, but who's in on Friday nights? That's your key demo for this audience.
Oh, that's a good point.
Nerds.
That's a good point. The nerds are in. Well, thank you, nerds, for watching our show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all like the, you know, the cool people are out on Friday night.
Yeah, yeah.
I never had anything to do on Friday night. Right.
Well, I'm glad to the nerds that are staying home and watching reality television.
There you go. Getting that Little Caesars and getting the King of the Nerds on.
Yeah, yeah, of course. It's hot and ready.
It's hot and ready, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Zach, this has been a lot of fun. Of course, you could follow Zach on Twitter. He's at, I want to make sure I say this right, it's ZADCK3.
Yes,
right?
That's right. Yeah. And I also want to throw out there, too, I just published, I got my first novel out there published. I'm working on two other ones, but I wanted to throw it out there that's out there now. If you check out voidsaga.com, that's VOIDSAGA.com. That's the website for my new novel, Zanar Impossibility, and you can get it in physicals, and you can also get it digitally at Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. It's a great young adult fantasy novel. I'm really, really excited about it. It's just very exciting story. It's a sci-fi fantasy. We've got, you know, lots of really cool elemental magic and action and monsters and fighting. And it's just, it's a really, really great story that I think you'll love if you're a fan of the genres whatsoever. So please check that out if you are interested.
Yeah. Well, so what is this book about?
So, I mean, it's Zanar Impossibility. I wrote this book. I started writing this book, rather, all the way back in high school. And it was something that was a major project of mine. Now I'm working on my third novel, actually, all the way right now. I'm well into it, like 40,000 words or so.
Is it all part of the same universe, or is it completely different?
Well, so the name voidsaga.com for the website there, in terms of part of the same universe, the things I am writing, yes, exist within the same universe, but they are very, very separate on an extraordinarily large timeline. The goal is that when they're all out there, if you read them all, you're going to find little Easter eggs, you're going to find little things, and it's going to connect in fun ways. But Zanar Impossibility, basically, it follows the adventures of Clyde and Saul. Clyde is a Earthling who meets the alien Saul. And
Better Call Saul?
Well, pronounced that way, but that's different. female Saul.
Okay.
S-A-E-L. So, and then he gets pulled into the planetary system of Zanar, where he unlocks, you know, ancient evils and, you know, has to decipher this crazy new situation that he's been thrown into and sort of, you know, tackle with really, really ancient conflicts. And it's really fun. It's a really great story that I'm very proud to finally be sharing after working on it so long. As I said, I started it all the way back in high school. It was based on some dream I had. There's a crazy story with that. But and then I you know, I've thrown it out and rewritten it like a dozen times since then. And it's something that I'm so passionate about. I also actually had the novel featured in a major online video game at AdventureQuestWorlds.com or AQ.com rather. And it had, like, you know, parts of the story and characters in the game, which was really cool because the game is definitely inspired by video games and anime and things like that. So it was so cool that I had some friends who could help me promote it through this big major MMO. So it's a project I'm just so incredibly passionate about. And I really hope you'll check it out.
All right. Check out voidsaga.com. Zach, thank you so much. Looking forward to seeing how King of the Nerds plays out these last 2 weeks.
I am too, and right, thank you so much for having me here.
All right, final chance. The winner of King of the Nerds is?
I'm going with Rochelle.
Oh, that would be a dark horse.
Let's see. Yeah, I think it could happen.
Okay. All right, Zach, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much too. It's been great to be here. I hope to be here again sometime.
All right, great. Talk to you again soon.
Bye. Yeah, bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Zach Storch back here on Rob Has a Podcast. Of course, our King of the Nerds recaps will be back this weekend to talk about episode 7. Of season 3. And of course, you could hear our season 3, episode 6 recap from this past weekend at robiswebsite.com. Then on Wednesday, we will get back into all the Survivor stuff. I'll have Survivor Know-It-Alls. Plus, we will have our big recap podcast with Chaos Cast joining us this week. Also, I'll talk to the latest person kicked off of Survivor on Thursday. And then we'll do our amazing race wrap up on Friday night. And a quick reminder to everybody, the award season is here. Podcast Awards voting is happening daily at podcastawards.com. We really appreciate your support for Rob as a Podcast, voting for us to win Best Entertainment Podcast of the Year and People's Choice Podcast of the Year at podcastawards.com. You can vote once per day for both of those categories. So thank you guys so much. Thanks to Zach Storch, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.